This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
There's a new sheriff over at the Federal Reserve, and he's a little laconic. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. We like to say that when the Fed moves interest rates, it's the policy decision that affects every woman, man, and child in America. The guardians of interest rates have decided the U.S. economy has had enough accelerator and is now making it a little bit more expensive to borrow money. The Fed will now use its magic to keep a key short-term interest rate 0.25 percentage point higher. And while the newly installed boss, Jerome Powell, spoke, what did he actually say? Let's bring in veteran Fed watcher Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the accounting and consulting firm Grant Thornton. Hey, Diane.
Good morning.
So what did you glean from the new chair of the Federal Reserve and his meeting with the media yesterday?
Well, I think he answered as many questions or was asked as many questions as Chair Yellen was during her tenure at press conferences at the Fed, although his answers were shorter and less explanatory than we've seen in the past. He was someone who clearly wanted to keep his cards close to his vest as he talked about the reasons for what they did and what they might do going forward. He left us with fewer answers and more questions at the next press conference.
The paradox, though, is he comes off as more plain speaking. He's not doesn't get mired in that Fed speak quite as much. But as you say, in the end, what did you really learn?
He is more plain spoken. He's a non-economist. He's a lawyer. And in fact, there were sometimes people said they felt like he was responding to a deposition because of the shortness of his answers when asked about tariffs and taxes and things that could have a political tenor to them. He went to great lengths to say, well, there was discussion, but a lot of uncertainty around the table, and deflected it from his own views to what people were reporting around the table, which means now the minutes to this meeting will have a much heightened sort of interest because they'll be much more revealing than I think he was at his first press conference.
And Jerome Powell and team have a new special challenge now. Washington, it could be argued, is pulling in the opposite direction from the way the Fed might want to pull.
Exactly. Congress is trying to spike the punch. Well, of course, we see the Fed trying to water it down. And that always creates political tension. So it might serve the Fed extremely well to have someone that's a lawyer and more savvy on the political side that can deflect instead of get marred in any kinds of political issues. And I think that's exactly what you saw. There is something to be said for saying less when you're in a more combative phase.
Hey, Diane, short answer. Are we going to get two more rate hikes this year, or do you think you're going for three here?
I think we're going for three. We're one person away from going for three rate hikes this year, and I think by June we'll have the data to back it up.
All right, Diane Swonk at Grant Thornton, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The housing market got some okay news this week. Existing home sales rebounded in February after a slump earlier in the winter. Data on new home sales out tomorrow are also expected to edge higher. And it's now spring, which is the big season to sell and buy, right? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more on that.
It's a great time to sell a home in many markets. Prices rising strongly, bidding wars as soon as a property hits the market, which can make it tough for anyone looking to buy for the first time. like Lily Rigg Glenn, a personal trainer in Portland, Oregon, who's been house hunting for years.
To try to find a place where I can actually not only feel safe and comfortable, but also start to build some financial security and stop throwing away my own money on rent.
But the market isn't meeting demand from all those frustrated renters, says economist David Burson at Nationwide Insurance.
There's a significant lack of supply, both of existing and new homes on the market.
Let's tackle new home construction first. Here's David Blitzer at S&P Dow Jones.
Back in 2005, we were building houses like crazy, probably 2.5 times the current rate.
Now, he says, builders can't find enough cheap land or skilled workers. They've been building fewer, more expensive homes because that's where the profit is. Meanwhile, the supply of existing homes keeps shrinking.
People don't want to put their house in the market because they're afraid they won't be able to find another house to move into.
When people stay put, it pushes prices higher for the limited number of homes that do go up for sale. In Portland, Lily Rigg Glenn and her wife, an electrician, found that the only homes they could afford were older fixers. They just closed on a 3-bedroom, 1-bath.
Welcome to my spacious kitchen.
Full of painting supplies.
Full of cleaning supplies and empty beer bottles.
They paid a little under $300,000 in a neighborhood of modest homes on the outskirts of town. Glenn says she loves her new home's vintage charm, but it needs a lot of work.
Our realtor said it was the worst inspection report she's ever had.
Still, they offered over the asking price in a bidding war. Nationwide, home prices are rising about 6% a year, more than twice as fast as incomes. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And when the Iowa-based media conglomerate Meredith took over Time Incorporated, it was widely expected that it would sell off the most famous magazines. Well, that has now been confirmed. The new owners plan to sell Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated, Fortune, and Money. 200 jobs will end now, with 1,000 more to go by next winter. Non-editorial operations will move from New York to Des Moines. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.